Chapter 28.
Iden was wrestling with her emotions, shoving them down to be dealt with later. How could you be so confident in your decision and still question it? How could the same thing be both wrong and right? It doesn't matter, she told herself. You did what you were ordered to do. Nestled snugly inside a compartment of her utility belt was the precious chip. The Partisans would never recover. They would never threaten the Empire again, in any way, large or small. I'm on my way back, she said to Hask.
Is it done? Did he have the chip?
It's safe in my pocket. All we have to do is get out of here and head home.
Copy that. But I have a little surprise for you first.
Iden frowned. Did something happen? What's going on?
Everything is completely under control, and it wouldn't be a surprise if I told you. Del's got the ship out and ready to go.
I don't like surprises, Hask. And I'll be there in 10. Del and Hask were waiting for her when she brought her speeder up to the shuttle. So were the Dreamers. Del was leaning against the ramp. His head rested on one arm, cradling his face. A blaster dangled limply from the fingers of his other hand. His body was taut, as if he were in pain. Hask had a blaster, too, but he was grinning, waving to Iden as she pulled up. The Dreamers lay sprawled on the ground. Iden stared at the crumpled forms. She couldn't breathe. Staven, an expression of shock still on his face. The Coggies lying beside each other, reunited with Sidori. Dana had fallen in an oddly graceful position, her Leku fanning out beside her. A dancer even in death. And Piakau, his little body looking even smaller and more fragile, now that it did not house the energy of his enthusiastic personality. All bore the unmistakable marks of blaster burns. All were quite dead.
See? I told you it was a surprise, Hask said. Shockingly easy. We should have done this a long time ago.
Iden was on him, grabbing his tunic and shoving him hard against the ship's bulkhead. He made no move to stop her and simply stared as if she'd lost her mind. Breath came back to her in a rush. Why? She shrieked. Why?
Easy, Captain, soothed Hask. You're getting carried away here. All I did was...
This wasn't necessary, Iden continued to rail. We're cleaners. We're not assassins. We're not murderers. We got what we needed. The mission was over. They were toothless. You had your orders, damn it. You disobeyed them. You disobeyed me. She took a breath and said again more quietly,
This wasn't necessary.
She stepped back, the anger receding like a wave from the beach, leaving her feeling weak and achingly tired. Wisely, Hask didn't say anything else. Iden forced herself to turn and look at the bodies.
There's no rush to leave now, she said.
Her voice sounded flat to her own ears, as if she were speaking in a room that muffled sound.
We'll bury them.
The Dreamers just left Shen to be taken by... We're not the Dreamers, Hask, she snapped. We're supposed to be better than they are, remember? Or have you gotten so caught up in Staven's bloodlust that you've forgotten you're an Imperial officer? Hask drew breath to speak, but Del interrupted him.
Captain, Lieutenant, we've got company.
Iden followed Del's wide-eyed gaze and gasped. Moving toward them were huge, lumbering forms, humanoid except for perfect round heads out of which stared two spots of dark, luminescent purple. The sound of blaster fire rent the air, and one of the forms shattered like a clay pot. The pieces fell to the ground, revealing more crystals contained within. Del reached over to Hask and grabbed the blaster, preventing him from shooting a second time.
I don't think they're going to hurt us, Del said, but let's get out of their way.
The three Imperial agents stepped back, away from the bodies, and watched with a combination of astonishment and trepidation. There were four now, moving toward the shuttle, and the figures sprawled in the dirt. More movement farther off revealed that a fifth
was approaching to join them.
These are your statues,
Aiden said. She was whispering, she didn't know why.
Yes, Del said, also softly. They've been reactivated somehow. But there are only four, wait, five of them.
They don't seem hostile, Aiden said.
But they're coming, Hask said.
There are a lot of them in that cavern,
Del warned him.
They just keep coming. We'd run out of blaster power before half of them got here.
He watched, almost reverently, as the clay creations continued their steady stride.
Something woke them, and I have to know what.
They stood and watched. Closer, the huge constructs came, calmly, with no hostile or rapid movements, until each of the five stood beside a fallen dreamer. Then, in perfect synchronization, they bent and gently, oh so gently, took the limp forms in their arms. Aiden watched in wonder, her heart suddenly, strangely full, as the statues seemed to cradle the bodies, like a parent gathering up a slumbering child and bearing it to bed. Then whatever had sent them here caused them to turn around, and as slowly and solemnly as they had arrived, they retreated the way they had come.
I was wrong, Del breathed. I thought they operated on telepathy. They do respond to sentient brain activity, but only when it stops.
So this was why there were no relics of the ancient civilization. They had created guardians who tended to them when life was extinguished, bearing their bodies away out of sight, bearing away perhaps all remnants of their existence.
What is all they were meant to do? Hask asked.
Even he pitched his voice low as they watched the retreating guardians, carrying their precious burdens, disappear into the distance.
It could be, Del said.
But what better way to address the end of a civilization?
This was what happened to the stormtrooper, to Aizen and Sen, Aiden said.
It's why we didn't find their bodies. These guardians sensed the end of sentient life and took care of them.
She paused.
I'm glad. Me too, Del said.
Hask said nothing, but he looked more serious and thoughtful than Aiden had ever seen him. Her anger with him fell away, as if the Guardians had borne that away with them as well, and she was glad of that too.
Let's go home, said Captain Aiden Versio.
The debriefing was as rocky as Aiden had expected it to be. They were grilled separately by an Admiral Versio who made little effort to hide his disappointment that they had lost one of their members. Aiden remembered sitting in her father's office with Del, Hask, and Sen, her stomach in knots, burning with the desire to be the one who led the team, the best of the best. Now she folded her hands and regarded him as he fired question after question. When did she know that the mysterious, nameless mentor was the informant? How did they spot Aizen? What did Sen do to reveal herself? Why did Aiden not notice that Sen was in distress? He kept hammering at her as if she were a rebel ship and he were a TIE fighter, using words instead of a laser cannon. She took a breath before answering each question, calmly and completely. Finally, he asked the one she knew was coming.
Whose fault is it that Lieutenant Marana died?
It was my fault, and mine alone, she said. He raised his eyebrows at that.
You don't think she brought it on herself? That it was her own carelessness that caused her death?
No, sir. She was my crew member. She was my responsibility. And then the words. I failed her and my team.
She might not have Sen's eidetic memory, but Aiden knew that she would never forget the look on Sen's face. The silent yes.
Lieutenant Marana wasn't just my squad member. She was my friend. I can only hope that I can be as courageous and selfless as she was one day when it's my turn to face death. I myself am prepared to accept any discipline you suggest. Her father leaned back in his chair, scrutinizing her.
You yourself? What about your crew? From the sound of things, they too fail, Lieutenant Marana.
I would argue against discipline for them. I will point out that in a single mission, we stopped a potentially disastrous leak before its final target was attacked and turned the Dreamers against one another. Sooner rather than later, they'd have been fighting themselves, not us. Hask's activity was significant in dividing the Dreamer membership, and Miko's technological mastery enabled us to communicate and interfere with the Dreamers on a regular basis.
So you are saying the agents obeyed your orders to the letter?
Negative, sir. But no harm was done.
The Dreamers had been living on borrowed time. If Aiden was brutally honest with herself, she had to admit that death by blaster bolt was preferable to other ways they might have met their ends, particularly if the Empire had come to do so.
Lieutenant Hask eliminated the Dreamers of his own volition. It is my opinion he believed he was adhering to the larger scope of the mission, which had as part of its goal the eventual elimination of the entire partisan resistance movement.
We could have gotten information out of them first,
Versio said.
I've included that in my report on Lieutenant Hask.
Aiden suddenly realized how very much she would not have wished that on Dana or Piakau, or even on the Coggies or Staven. She made no reply.
Debriefing of Captain Aiden Versio concluded, her father said into the holo recorder. Recommend no further investigation into the death of Lieutenant Sen Marana. Recommendation for posthumous Black Laurel for service to the Empire issued. Commendations are also recommended for Commander Del Miko and Lieutenant Gideon Hask, and also for Captain Aiden Versio.
He turned off the holo recorder. Aiden was surprised.
Thank you, sir, she said, rising. Permission to speak freely.
Granted.
When can I talk to Mama? I assume she's been told about
Aiden.
The usage of her first name stopped Aiden cold. Words suddenly lodged in her throat. Something had happened. Something bad. She couldn't even find the words to form a question, simply looked up at him mutely, silently begging that whatever he had to say would not be the thing she imagined, the thing she feared.
Why don't you sit back down?
He began. The words escaped. No, she said. I'll stand. He searched her eyes, then nodded.
It's as you wish. I wanted to tell you this earlier, but we had no way to easily and safely communicate with Inferno Squad until your mission was completed. Versio said, his voice quiet. We couldn't risk jeopardizing the mission. And I didn't.
He paused to clear his throat.
I wanted to tell you in person.
No.
No.
Voiceless. Helpless. Her ramrod straight posture, all that was left to her. Aiden waited.
Her illness was more advanced than either of us knew. 3 weeks after you left, it claimed her life.
Aiden continued to stare at him, her fists clenching, still unable to speak.
Zihei never much cared for Vardos, so we had her interred on Savaha, where she had her last assignment. There's footage of the ceremony if you'd like to see it, and I can arrange for you to visit her grave if you wish to do so.
Aiden wanted to rage. Scream. Claw his face. Claw her own. See Hay's bright smile, her warm eyes, her joyful, unself-conscious belly laugh. Those long fingers covered with old-fashioned paint. Gone. All gone. She died thinking her daughter was a traitor. Her voice was a whisper. A breath. Her father said nothing for a moment. Then, in a quiet voice, he said,
No. She didn't.
Aiden gasped softly, her eyes burning with tears. She stared at her father as if at a stranger, trying to reconcile all she had known her entire life with those three simple words. The mission was top secret, and he had violated all manner of military regulation to do what he had done. Her heart was full. So beautifully full. And yet it was broken. Because this moment meant everything, and changed nothing. "Thank you," was all she said. He nodded. They stood for a moment.
"You're a strong soldier, Captain Versio," he said at last.
"Thank you, sir," she replied. He squared his shoulders, and the moment slipped into memory.
"Rest up. I've arranged for all of you to have private lodgings for tonight. Thought you might appreciate some solitude after living with those..."
Versio couldn't even come up with a word vile enough to describe what he felt about the Dreamers.
"Them," he finished. "You and the rest of your team will report here at 0900 for your next assignment. I know it's soon, but it's always best to get right back into the thick of things, not dwell on them. And the Empire needs your help."
"I serve at the pleasure of the Empire, sir."
"I know you do. You're a Versio. It's how I raised you."
He paused.
"Good night, Captain. Dismissed."
She was still at the diplomat, but this time she had her own room, on one of the regular floors. There was no guard at the door, for which Aiden was unspeakably grateful. She entered the code for the door, stepped inside, and let it close behind her. As it did so, the room lit up automatically. Aiden's bag fell from nerveless fingers to the carpeted floor. She took a forced breath and muttered, "Off." She couldn't bear the light. Too bright. Showing things too clearly. She needed darkness. Quiet. Anything that wasn't harsh or cruel. Even her skin felt hypersensitized. As raw against the brush of her gabberwool uniform, as if the first few layers had been removed. Outside, myriad colors flashed, bright splotches in the never-quite-dark night. Aiden turned around, staring out the window, then made her way stiff-legged to the bed. She felt 1,000 years old as she sat down, staring at nothing, but seeing everything. She smelled her mother's scent, light and sporty and clean, felt those strong, comforting arms slip around her small child's body before Zihe, with a reassuring smile, went into the shuttle. She saw Sen, in her crisp white Navint outfit, her impossibly young face a carefully controlled blank. She saw the scars marring that face, and then the expression of calm resignation in the young woman's eyes, even as she snarled in false rage. She saw Sen fall. Aiden closed her eyes and shoved the heels of her palms into them, but closed eyes did nothing to halt the parade of images. She thought of Pia Kao's bright eyes, of how beautifully Dana moved when she danced just for herself, of Sidori's shy smile when he looked at Sen, as if she were all that was wonderful and beautiful in the galaxy, encapsulated in the slender form of a petite young woman. Of how, sometimes, Aiden had seen that same expression in Staven's eyes when he looked at Nadrine. She saw again Aizen's torture. The limp bodies that Hask had offered as a surprise. And the enormous and silent guardians who so tenderly gathered them and bore them to rest. She saw Lux Bonteri, the senator from Onderon, giving a speech to a single audience member in a natural amphitheater light years away, his voice still strong, still filled with hope and determination, despite all that he had seen. She saw Tarvin Larika looking at her with concern in his eyes as they walked the floor of a Star Destroyer.
"Best for all of us that she's gone. She's a Versio in name only. We, you and I, are true Versios. And Versios don't cry, do they?"
"No, sir,"
her 5-year-old self had replied in a voice thick with unnurtured shrieks of grief.
"Versios don't cry.
But the tears did not care that she was Aversio. They came at last, racking her body, scalding her eyes and face, hoarsening her throat. An outpouring of grief, not just for Zihei Versio, who was the last soft thing Aiden ever remembered, but for everything that had ever been hurt or destroyed or ruined. Everything she had lost, from the woman who bore her to the childhood she'd never really had. And when at last her sobs were spent and the tears had dried, their salty crust on her face, evidence of grief made manifest, the world was the same as it was before. The lights still dipped and dodged in the window. The bed was still soft. The sheets still crisp, although her pillow was damp. Aiden's breathing slowed. It was the first time she had wept since the night her mother had left Fardos, when a little girl had curled up and, muffling her sobs in the pillow, wept for the mother who had never really returned, and now never would. But she had passed peacefully. And somehow, Aiden knew that everything would be all right. Despite her aching certainty that she would never, ever sleep again, sleep stole over her. In her dreams, the Shinya trees wept over water, and their leaves bled crimson until it was washed away.